Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Michael O'Hanlon. He is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute and co-director of its Center for 21st Century Security, one of the most thoughtful people, in my estimation, on the left. He is also the author of a new book, The Future of Land Warfare, adding to a very comprehensive collection of books and various other productions that really have informed the thinking of many on national security for a very long time. He's always welcome here. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. O'Hanlon. Good to have you again with us.
Well, thank you, Secretary Gaffney. It's great to be with you. Appreciate the privilege.
Well, let's start with a topic that we've been discussing so far in the program, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. The Iran deal that President Obama believes should be approved shortly by the United States Congress. Tell me what your thoughts are on this nuclear agreement with the Iranians.
You know, I'm not a huge fan, Frank, but I would probably vote for it. But let me explain briefly why I'm not a huge fan. It's especially the sunset provisions. The idea that, you know, we can schedule now when Iran will have been deemed to qualify to get out of jail, so to speak, even though its egregious behavior on this front lasted a lot longer than the 5 to 15 year time periods that are now going to be, you know, the sunset period. And depending on whether you're talking about conventional or ballistic missiles or one or another type of the nuclear restrictions. And I think a more indefinite kind of you know, agreement would have been appropriate, whereby Iran indefinitely accepted that, given its past behavior on the nuclear front and its ongoing behavior throughout the region, that the world was not going to give up on these sanctions until it saw a substantial change over a prolonged period of time that couldn't even be specified right now. In other words, if you want the sanctions relief, you're going to have to accept an indefinite set of constraints on your nuclear activities. If that had been the deal, then I would support it. I still wouldn't enjoy supporting it. And in fact, I do support it now, but only very marginally and sort of by holding my nose. But if it were an indefinite duration, then I would say, as much as I hate to lose the sanctions because they constrain Iran's behavior in the way that you and others have described, I think, accurately, nonetheless, it's a deal that probably benefits us fairly clearly. The current sunset make me more of a 51-49 kind of guy on the deal, so I'm not very happy about that.
Well, particularly, I would assume you'd be troubled by the fact that those sanctions come off very early on, even if the duration were not a problem. The fact that long before we see how they are performing under these restrictions, such as they are, they do get the get-out-of-jail-free pass, it seems.
Yeah, I think people use this expression, snapback, and I know that there is some meaning to that phrase. It's not entirely contrived, but as the sanctions start to be relaxed and lifted, I think it's going to be extraordinarily hard to get most of the world to come back and support a reimposition, even if we in the United States might reach that conclusion. So, again, that's part of the logic that I know troubles a lot of critics of the deal, and it troubles me as well, even though I'm a tepid supporter. So, yes, I have to go along with you, even though we probably come down slightly different bottom line, but those specifics trouble me as well.
You're a serious guy about this national security stuff, Michael O'Hanlon. That's why we relish our chances to talk with you about it. It's just that I think we do come down on the opposite sides on how this thing should be ultimately adjudicated, simply because, among other things, all that money, in addition to the greater latitude to expend it in all kinds of ways, is going to be really problematic, I think, for us on a whole host of fronts. Let me turn to something else that you've been working on, and I think commendably so. You had General John Campbell, the commander of Operation Resolute Support, as they now call the operation in Afghanistan, into your Brookings Center earlier this week, and had an opportunity to hear from him about how he sees things developing there, particularly with respect to what seemed to be some fracturing of the Taliban. Give us a flavor of what General Campbell said and what the prognosis is, as you see it now, for Afghanistan.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. We were thrilled to host him. And as you know, he's one of the many American men and women in uniform, and also a number of civilians, one of whom, Matt Sherman, his political advisor, who joined him, who have been serving in these wars just an extraordinarily long period of time. General Campbell first went to Afghanistan in 2002 as a colonel, and now he's a four-star general and in command of the overall NATO and American operation there. And, you know, there are just a lot of basic facts that he was able to remind us of in some cases or provide new information about in others that I think are really central and added up to a fairly hopeful picture. But, you know, I'll start with the basic fact, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know this because of their interest in national security, but a lot of people have forgotten. We're down to only 10,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan today. That's a 90% reduction from the peak. And I think it's a sustainable burden on American taxpayers and the military. And so I'm hoping President Obama will reconsider his plan to zero out the operational units by the end of next year. And even more dramatic than the downsizing of the number of personnel is the remarkable reduction in U.S. casualty rates. We've only lost one serviceman this year in Afghanistan, and we've lost a civilian as well and three contractors. So this is obviously still a tragic price. We thank them and their families at every opportunity, but this is now a pace of loss where we're in clearly in a support role. The Afghans are doing the overwhelming fraction of the fighting. They are suffering several thousand fatalities a year to their army and police. But, you know, if there's any silver lining in that, it's they're fighting hard. And they're doing a fairly good job. General Campbell described a number of multi-core operations they had planned and conducted on their own. And he also pointed out the big cities and the major roads remain essentially in government control, usable by the civilian population day to day. And also, even though we see headlines of how a district center or a small town may sometimes be attacked or even taken by the Taliban, he pointed out that these days the Afghan army tends to mount a counterattack within 24 hours and take it back. And that kind of information hasn't been reaching my ears as often as I would like through the mainstream media. For example, the report that did come out this week and got a lot more attention than General Campbell was the latest UN report on civilian casualties in Afghanistan, pointing out they had increased. And that's true, but they increased only by, I think, 1 or 2%. And the overall rate of civilian fatalities in Afghanistan is actually less than in a lot of countries that are technically at peace around the world. A lot of our friends in Latin America or parts of Africa, frankly, statistically, it's not even that different from the murder rate in the United States per person. That probably undercounts the casualties somewhat. It's hard to track them. But the overall image that people sometimes gain of an Afghanistan that's up in flames, it's not accurate. And I think that's important for sustaining the political support for the mission here in the United States.
It clearly is. And Michael O'Hanlon, again, with the Brookings Institution, senior fellow there, talk for a moment, if you would, about the take you have, and that evidently that General Campbell may have shared with you as well, of what is happening with respect to the Taliban. Presumably some of the good news that you've just shared is a function of the difficulties they are facing internally, but also what you make of the prospects that at least some part of the Taliban is now aligning itself with the Islamic State.
Great questions, Frank. I don't think General Campbell ventured too strong of an opinion as to whether the Taliban is going to weaken or strengthen as a result of the announcement of the news of Mullah Omar. Or to put it more accurately, I think he's worried there could be some short-term increases in violence, and there has just been a tragic attack overnight that killed a lot of Afghan civilians in Kabul. And I think some of this could be hardline factions within the Taliban trying to establish their bona fides and their claim on being the, you know, proper and authentic successor to Mullah Omar by trying to espouse extreme violence and maybe even to also compete, as you say, with ISIL, which is not thought to have a large presence in Afghanistan, but it is sort of the new kid on the block. It has the new message. They're, as we know, troublingly good at social media. And the Taliban may worry that if it doesn't come up with some big new provocative and dramatic attacks, that ISIL is going to have greater claim to the new recruits and the hardliners. So we could see a period of increased tension and turmoil as a result of what's probably still on balance positive news for the long term. But those are the kinds of themes that General Campbell was trying to get at in his presentation.
And as you've said, not only just now, but for a long time, some of that good news, if it is indeed going to have any duration at all, is going to be a function of how we conduct ourselves going forward. I agree with you on the idea that we shouldn't be abandoning the place after all the blood, sweat, and tears and national treasure and lives and all the rest that's gone into it. Michael O'Hanlon, thank you for joining us. We wanted to talk with you about a recent piece you also wrote for the Wall Street Journal about the unsinkable aircraft carriers in the Pacific now that China is building with islands there. But that's for another day. We'll be speaking about it with Dr. Paul Navarro momentarily, however. And thank you, Michael, for joining us. Paul Navarro, up next on China, what's happening there, and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.